Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Lawrence L. Allen is a senior international business executive, leadership consultant, and author with a 20-year track record building branded consumer product businesses in China for leading multinational companies. For 7 years, Allen was a foot soldier on the front line of China's chocolate war, first as an executive with Hershey and later Nestle. He's a graduate of Thunderbird School of Global Management, where he began his China studies and earned his MBA in International Business Management. Allen's author of the book Chocolate Fortunes. It's published by Amicom. Amicom is a subsidiary of the American Management Association. He's a bicultural Mandarin Chinese speaker, and he's calling us right now from Beijing, China. Lawrence, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you, Dave.
Lawrence, I have a question. Now, chocolate and China. Those are two things that people don't normally associate. Could you give us a brief overview of the history of chocolate in China?
Chocolate's journey began in pre-Columbia Americas, where it was taken as a beverage by the privileged classes. It then moved to Europe with the Spanish in the 1500s, where it was also a beverage for the aristocratic classes there. And over the next couple hundred years, chocolate gradually became more accessible to the masses through chocolate houses, where it was still consumed as a beverage, pretty much as coffee is today. Then in the late 19th century, the technology existed to make solid eating chocolate like we are accustomed to. Now, chocolate made its first entry into China during the late colonial era, but there was near zero market penetration. It was mainly restricted to the foreign colonial concession areas in China. And in 1949, when the communists took over and closed China's doors to the outside world, chocolate virtually disappeared in China until 1978, when the country reopened its doors. And in the 1980s, chocolate began to trickle in, mainly through Hong Kong. And by the first half of the 1990s, the major chocolate companies had set up shop in China. Today, China is still a relatively small market. About one-fifth of the world's population now consumes only about 2% of the world's chocolate.
Now, here in America, we have very strong associations with chocolate, from rich European truffles to the familiar Hershey's Kiss. What are some of the Chinese perceptions of chocolate, and how does this impact business?
Chocolate's image was as an exotic, foreign symbol of wealth and Western culture, so its only practical market entry point was as a fashionable gift and as a foreign exotic novelty. And for a while there, it was the fruitcake of China. Chocolate gift boxes were often given and re-given until people actually became accustomed to eating it.
Right.
Chinese consumers essentially had a clean palate. China was totally foreign, and there was no heritage in the Chinese diet whatsoever. Now, that meant that there was no taste preference. So all products, from Hershey's bars to Nestle Crunch to Cadbury Dairy Milk chocolate, were totally new to consumers. This is an important point because chocolate taste preferences tend to define markets. In the U.S., Hershey is the preferred taste, in the U.K., Cadbury, and so on. Once these preferences are established, it is really hard to get people to switch from their favorite products. But China was a virgin chocolate market, so all chocolate companies had an equal opportunity to establish their chocolate as the preferred taste in China.
And so, do you think companies like Hershey's and Nestle face the same types of challenges as Coca-Cola or even getting out of the food business Levi's might face in penetrating the Chinese market?
Now, food of the major categories has a particular dimension to it because it really involves taste and how you've established your taste preferences over your lifetime. These are very difficult things to overcome. You can change your brand of jeans from one day to the next, but it's really hard to get people to change their tastes.
And what would you say are some of the biggest challenges facing the world's chocolate companies when introducing chocolate to China?
Certainly, discerning a route to commercial success. Now, what I mean by that is that you are dealing with both hardware problems and software problems. Hardware problems were mostly associated with China's antiquated infrastructure and government bureaucracy. A simple phone call in the 1980s is a great example. The way you'd make a phone call is you'd write your number down on a slip of paper and you'd give it to a phone dialer who'd go off for a half hour, dial and redial and redial until they got a line. But the biggest hardware problems were really dealing with China's non-air-conditioned supply chain, or worse, a partial air-conditioned supply chain, because you never knew where to look for trouble. And chocolate needs air conditioning.
Mm.
But those were just the physical challenge, Dave. Understanding the software issues was in many ways more challenging. consumer perceptions of chocolate had a big impact on the business.
Uh-huh. Could you expand on that?
Sure, Dave. Chinese pharmacognosy and the belief in heating and cooling foods had an impact. Pharmacognosy is the belief that you can balance the yin and the yang forces within the body. Yin is described as the body being in a cool condition and yang in the heat condition, both of which can be regulated by the kinds of food you eat. For example, the body is said to have excessive yin during the common cold, menstruation, pregnancy, and foods thought to increase yin, such as melons, asparagus, and cold drinks, should be avoided. To restore the balance, foods that bring in more yang or heat into the body, such as lamb, pepper, chocolate, are recommended. Conversely, people afflicted with acne, skin rashes, allergies, and hypertension are said to have excessive yang and should avoid consuming yang foods and stick to yin foods. Coincidentally, here in the West, we are told that chocolate causes acne, and some doctors even recommend chocolate as comfort food for dealing with menstrual cramps.
Interesting. Why is it important?
I can't say that on its own this dramatically affected sales, but it did have an impact, and it is symbolic of the brave new cultural world that business managers needed to understand dealing in China.
Right.
But I would say the most important software issue was understanding and meeting consumers' expectations, which is, of course, important in any market. It's just that this process was more difficult and complex in China. But these are all external issues. It's important to remember that chocolate companies had an open market and a willing consumer. So for these external issues, where there's a will, there's a way. If there is demand, sellers and consumers will eventually find each other. In fact, the bigger challenge for the global chocolate companies was internal. Now, the big five players in China's chocolate market over the past 25 years have been Nestle, Hershey, Cadbury, Ferrero, and Mars. And their internal issues were things like short-term investment horizons. Those companies looking for a quick turnaround in China failed. In other words, if there's no will to have a sustained investment, there was no way to win in the market no matter what you did.
Of course.
Another internal factor was competent and consistent leadership. This was a key factor. For some of the players, leadership was focused and effective, and they succeeded. Others were distracted and vacillating, and this had a big impact on success or failure.
Can you give us some examples?
Absolutely. In one case, internal leadership chaos in one of the players led to distraction with these internal crises, which led to the organization breaking ranks, high turnover, which resulted in the consumers coming second. And ultimately, they lost their consumer base overnight.
Yeah.
So the biggest challenge for chocolate companies was to decode their individual formulas for success, assess their internal strengths and weaknesses, organizational strengths, product strengths, and so on, and correctly read the external market. And in both cases, sustained, competent, and effective leadership was most essential.
Lawrence, not too long ago, a couple of news stories did make their way out of China, and they had to do with the contamination of milk and dairy products. Did that impact the manufacture or the processing of chocolate in China?
It did on two levels. On the larger level, chocolate sales overall in the market did take a hit, but one company in particular, only one of the big five chocolate companies, actually withdrew its product from shelves and relaunched, and that was Cadbury.
Have there been any attempts to tie the sales of chocolate to traditional Chinese holidays or gift-giving?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, since chocolate entering the market as a gift initially was the only way really to get people to buy chocolate since they didn't tend to consume it themselves, chocolate sales around the Chinese New Year, which is one of the largest gift-giving seasons of the year, could account for as much as 40 or 50% of annual sales. There were two other seasons, one in the spring, May Day holiday, and one in the fall, the National Day, October 1st, which were also big gift-giving seasons. But really, Chinese New Year was the king of the gift-giving seasons, and chocolate sales for really the first 10 to 12 years were predominantly during that season.
Do you find that consumption of chocolate in China is pretty much stratified at this point to the rising middle and upper classes of China, or is it something you see across the societal spectrum?
It's quite a matrix, Dave. It's really a very complex decision model involving geographic location, where are there air-conditioned stores and a supply chain that can put product in front of consumers, income level, disposable income level of the people living in that area, familiarity with foreign products. For example, in Guangzhou, a city near Hong Kong, where there's a lot of Hong Kong influence, or more cosmopolitan cities, in Shanghai, the consumers have a broader palate. they're accustomed to foreign foods and are more likely to become consumers.
Right.
One of the biggest determining factors in this matrix is age. Hmm. The folks that grew up eating rice and cabbage and basic foods, let's say the generation now in their 50s and up, or even late 40s, really find chocolate just too strange and too foreign, both the taste and the texture. It's really the younger people in China, particularly those from the more well-off classes, that are really the consumer base in China. And recently, we've heard a lot about 100 million one-child-per-family children, the little emperors that have four grandparents, two parents, doting on them and buying them candy left and right.
Oh, yes.
So it is a very complex tableau that really leads to the target consumers in China.
Right. Lawrence, what are some lessons for people looking to successfully do business in China?
First, the market is just too large, too diverse, and changing too rapidly for one-size-fits-all business models or canned how-to answers. Bearing that in mind, most certainly it is listen to your consumers. Make them your boss, and you can't go wrong. Definitely prepare yourself to deal with the issues unique to China. Dealing with continuous change is the biggest one. Also, you're going to need a bias for action. If you wait too long in China and get tied up with analysis, the opportunities will pass you by. Be forward-looking in your thinking process. Understanding China's past is useful, but is not necessarily a guide for the future. Also, invest in your people, in training and development. Yes, for improved employee performance, but also for employee retention and business continuity. Personal relationships are important in China and important in business, and you can't build those relationships with your customers if your people are turning over every year or two. Finally, leadership and continuity have to be top priorities. Find the right people, lock them into the right behaviors with the right incentives, and lock them down tight with leak-proof financial governance and checks and balances. And then get out of their way. Don't micromanage from the head office. Let them do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up, do you have any other key points you want to leave our audience with?
Absolutely. With a high-growth, wide-open market in China, in many ways, the chocolate companies were competing more with themselves than with each other. So my advice to companies entering China is make sure you have your own act together so you can take advantage of the opportunities that the China market has to offer.
We've been speaking to Lawrence Allen, author of the book Chocolate Fortunes. Lawrence, thanks for being our guest today on Edgewise.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
As always, we'd love to get your feedback. So please drop us an email at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.